Welcome back, book nerds. On this episode, I'll be speaking with Stefan Diesel about his new short film, Thirst. In a dystopian future, South Los Angeles, a father and daughter avoid sweating, crying, and drinking water while trying to escape moisture-sensitive monsters. This 5-minute short film opens up an entire world I'm very excited to see explored in a future feature film. Let's chat with Stefan and learn more now. All right, book nerds, I'm now speaking with Stefan Diesel, the writer and director of Thirst. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me. All the gene book nerds out there. I'm a nerd myself, so humble and honored.
Well, you're among friends here on the podcast. Nerds unite.
Amen.
So for our listeners and our audience who maybe aren't familiar with you or your work or this short film, would you please just introduce yourself? Tell us a little about yourself and this new film.
I'm from New York. My family's from Haiti. I've been making movies for about almost 10 years now, lots of short films. And Thirst is a science fiction horror thriller that I made in partnership with 20th Digital Studio and 88th Street Productions as well, who established the relationship and also helped this entire thing come to fruition. And through them, we premiered the film at Holly Shorts. And Thirst basically follows a father and daughter, and it's set in a dystopian Los Angeles, and they're searching for resources where they live in an environment where they can't spit, sweat, cry, sneeze, or spill a drop of water because it'll attract these moisture-sensitive monsters who lurk in the shadows.
That sounds really hard to do. I mean, considering drinking water, sneezing, coughing, I mean, it sounds very difficult to not do any of those things, even feels like breathing.
Right. It is. And a lot of people in the world have to survive circumstances like that because of municipal difficulties and water that isn't clean. I think the crisis that people in the United States are probably the most familiar with is the most recent Flint water crisis that is still an issue that is being rectified as we speak. But this film serves as a cautionary tale and an exploration of the people of color who are disproportionately affected by these sort of crises and issues surviving with the basic needs of human survival.
So was that your inspiration for making this short film?
Absolutely. I definitely had the idea about water being some sort of a catalyst for the horror, you know, or at least clean water and contaminated water. I've been ruminating on that for a little over a year. And we were developing a longer format piece this summer. And we didn't have any production partners. So this was myself and my creative partner and my DP. We have been talking about this project for a long time, and we're already trying to find ways for us to put it together just on our own, because it was something that we were excited about. And fortuitously, this bite-sized Halloween initiative came about, and we were able to work with 20th Digital Studio and get the distribution from Hulu on the project for the short.
That's awesome. So I'm curious to know, this is going to be a two-part question. A lot of, you know, I know you wrote and directed this. You see that every now and then, you know, whoever, the writer also directing it or, you know, whatnot. I'm curious, why did you choose to be both the writer and the director instead of just writing or just directing this? And also, what's the process like once you have something and you want to make it, going out there and finding, you know, getting someone to back it or a producer or a production house to kind of like, you know, fund this? How, what's the process like? Do you know people, or do you just email out to a million people and hope someone gets back to you?
First answer, I'll say I chose to write and direct this piece because, one, the nature of timing and necessity. I love collaborating with writers. I always like to make sure that at some point I do get to hold the pen. And there are some really talented writers that I've worked on all my past projects with. But with this one, I'd say it was coming so fast and so quickly that I wrote it myself kind of out of necessity, because everybody else has been busy working from home and trying to figure out their lives, that sometimes, you know, sometimes these tasks can just fall on your shoulders. So with Thirst, that was definitely the nature of the process there. And at this point now, I've loved writing it myself, but I still have collaborators, again, the people who I create the world with. So my creative partner, and even my director of photography, and sometimes the performers, all have voices in how I'm looking to shape the project. But for this one specifically, it is just coming out of me organically. So that felt like the best approach. The second question of finding financing and putting together the project, I've been out here, I've been out of school since 2012. So yeah, I've been out here about 8 years. And I'd say that I spent a lot of my own money, and I put myself in debt funding my own projects many a time. So that is, for me, that was like kind of just a necessary threshold I had to cross. And then it just so happened that over time, you start to attract more people who are interested in working with you as you build your craft and vision. So I aligned myself with a musician and started doing a creative direction for one musician. That led to another musician, and then there was co-financing opportunities, and then someone else reaches out to produce one of your short films because they like that last one that you did. And then there are some creative stipulations that you have to follow for that when someone else is putting up the money. But basically there were just a lot of steps where, you know, I got like 5,000 from one person, and then, you know, 10,000 from another person. And then it just started to sort of evolve in its own way. And then with my film going to film festivals, the initiative with Bite Size Halloween, that was something that, you know, this seldom happens, but yeah, they ended up finding my work through the film festivals and partners at 88th Street. And then again, I had to pitch and flesh out an entire story and how I would expand it if it were a longer format. So that process as well was necessary to even to winning or being awarded the production opportunity from the studio.
So to touch on something you just mentioned, I'm curious, it is a short film. Do you have plans right now or a series or a feature film in the future?
Absolutely. There is a longer format that we were writing this summer, and I'm currently writing now. So a lot of what you see in the short, and I'm so excited about the short, because we were able to build this world before we even started writing the short film. We had already been crafting what the longer format would look like. So within the short film, there are a lot of Easter eggs. And frankly, I've tried to spend some time reading people's comments to see like what they can pick up on, because there are a lot of little nuggets there that do hint to what that longer piece will look like. There aren't, nothing in the short film is just random, or nor is it just for the short. It is hinting at what this larger world and larger story would look like. And that incorporates both how the outbreak happened and how it started, and then how we got to that point where this little girl has to be taught a nursery rhyme, even to just leave her house, or not even her house, the shack that she's squatting at with her father.
So I'm kind of curious to know, from your viewpoint, do you think it's harder to write a story for a feature film or for a short story? Because with a feature film, you have, you know, you have to fill 2 hours or 2.5 hours or however long you want to make it. And you have so much time to fill, and you, you know, but you don't want to just have it be lots of, you know, B-roll shots or establishing shots or something like that. But on the other hand, a short film, you have less time, so it's easier to fill that, but you have to really make every second count. Like you said, with a short film, you don't get enough time to really explore the backstory, how this, you know, how this occurred, where this came from. So do you prefer, you know, shooting feature films more than short films, or do you think each one is easier than the other?
I haven't shot a feature yet, which I'm hoping to do very soon. I think as filmmakers, we need to be as adaptable as possible, because I know these circumstances are really hard to make movies in, and we had to shoot our film under the COVID protocols strictly enforced, under the support of the studio and our production partners. So that made it to be seamless, but I haven't shot a feature yet, but I'm hoping to do so very soon. In terms of writing, I've written more shorts than features at this point, just because in the past 10 years, and then also when I was in college, that's all I was doing was writing short films. So it is a bit more secondhand at this point, or second nature rather. But now that we're writing the longer format, and with this project in particular, we had the longer format pretty much outlined out before we even wrote the short. I would say that it was even more fun to make the short film, because it felt like I was making a spin-off of a movie that doesn't really exist yet, but we were making a little 5-minute spin-off to tease people to that longer story. So at least with this approach, if you do have a longer idea, I would suggest writing that longer one out, so you know where you're going, where you're headed, so that when you're writing this smaller story that is showcasing with this one, just the rules or the tone and giving people just a little tease and taste of what the emotions would be. I think that approach and that way that we mapped it out, that was really fun and exciting for this project in particular. It might be different for different projects, as again, short films are similar to short stories in a way. So if you're making something in the form of some Kafka short story and that's just what it's meant to be, then follow that path. But with this one, if you have the longer format in the back of your head, I think it's good to write that, or at least have an idea of what that looks like first.
I think that's great advice. I mean, I'm not a writer myself, so I think I know I'm terrible at writing. So I applaud anyone who can not only write, but can write a feature film or a short film. So my hat's off to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it means a lot. We're all hustling out here.
Oh, absolutely. When writing a short film, I mean, I think this is true for any genre of filmmaking or even music, or, you know, really any type of art, is how do you kind of create a new story? Because obviously there's so many sci-fi movies, with so many, you know, apocalyptic movies, action, comedy, you know, any genre, pick one. But how do you make a short film or a feature film and not have it kind of almost be like, oh, he's just, you know, copying this film or making a slightly different version of this other film? How do you keep it original enough, but still kind of in that genre?
without giving all the tricks of my personal trade, I would say that one thing I like to do is to go back to obscure black and white movies and see how they did things back then and how some of those ideas came to fruition. So with Thirst, we were going back to the original black and white Invasion of the Body Snatchers. We were looking at, you know, the first Hill Have Eyes, and just you know, and then there are you will inevitably be inspired by contemporary cinema or contemporary art in some form. So that is why, like, I don't like to go straight there when just looking for inspiration. So when we're building out our mood boards or our design boards and costume boards, I'm trying to source from works that have a little bit more, that have a little bit more historical value, because I think that there is something to be said for older projects. And sometimes there's also, you know, there's also the avenue of not just using movies as an inspiration. So for me, I go to books and other paintings and music. You know, I know for this, like Sam Cooke singing "Jesus Gave Me Water," you know, with the Soul Stirrers back in the day, that was a huge inspiration for how we crafted the story. So I do think it's using different forms of inspiration that aren't just contemporary media, things that are just being shoved down our throats through TikTok or, you know, whatever news outlet that you're looking at that is showing you what movie you should watch on Amazon Prime. I think try to go a little outside the box, you know, go listen to a Frank Zappa album, you know, find some things that people wouldn't normally expect you to use as a source of inspiration.
I think that's some great advice. I mean, like you said, you know, going back to older films that are so rooted in history, and I think a lot of people, myself included, when we're looking for inspiration, you know, we just go to whatever our favorite films are and use that. We don't really necessarily think like, hey, let me, you know, look at books. Let me look at old black and white films. I don't think I've even seen watched a, you know, an older black and white film in a long, long time. But those are so great. And like you said, the way they're done is so different, and it can really inspire you for that.
Absolutely. And just to jump off of that, sorry, if, you know, I know you're asking another question, but
no, go for it.
Just jumping off of that, I would just say that, like, going back to those movies also inspired us to be more inventive, because back in the day, they didn't have access to all the visual effects tools and computer generated imaging that we have access to now in animation. And it also gave us that confidence to go in with this movie and try as many things that we could do in camera. So Thirst has zero visual effects. Like, the entire movie is all in camera, from the monster design to the every sequence. And granted, I know it's a 5-minute short, but that's something that we're really proud of, was figuring out a way to kind of craft this original horror movie with a world that we're hinting at and building, but that felt tactile.
No, it's awesome. I think, you know, as a filmmaker myself, I think whenever you can do it practically, it's always going to give you such a better effect and better look than if you can do it in CG. Just actors being able to actually react to what's really there is so much, it's going to come off more genuine.
Exactly.
So I hope this doesn't give anything away, and I don't think it will, but I'm curious to know a bit more about, because it's not really explained in the film all that much, the characters wear these kind of like cool colored collars.
Yes.
I'm curious to know if you could touch on a little bit about, you know, what those are and the purposes on that.
Yeah, that is something that hints at the larger world of Thirst and the past and history of the lore that we were developing. They're basically these cooling collars that were created so that they can keep the body temperature low and prevent you from sweating, and also maintain anxiety levels, emotional levels, so that you can walk through the hottest day of the year like Becca and her father are in the film and survive. However, as we see in the movie, they are limited by battery life, as everything has some form of limitation, especially with the grounded technology that we were trying to build into the story. And that has its consequences. So when the battery dies, now you become more susceptible to these human, these natural human reactions and ways that the body needs to survive, which is sweating and releasing your emotions. This device is emblematic of these people trying to be able to contain and control themselves in these very dire circumstances.
Gotcha. So that's what they were for. I figure they had something to do with that. I thought when I was watching, I was like, maybe these devices, you know, they let you know when you're sweating too much or something like that. So I wasn't quite sure. So interesting. It's good to know. I wish we had the devices like that already, because especially here in LA, I'm just like, man, sometimes you go outside, it is really warm outside. I'm like,
right. Yeah, there are some things like that do exist. And I know because there's a World Cup that's happening in Dubai, the FIFA World Cup. And I think it's Sony. They're developing a neck device that will keep the body temperature cool, that you just plant and you can put it onto your shirt, and they're trying to make it look sleek. So what
they took your idea. They took your idea, yeah, man. No,
what we did was we did look at some technology that is being developed that does sort of that. And then to find, and I give all the props, no pun intended, to our prop designer, Mazen Dajani, who crafted these things and made them look as functional as possible. So, you know, I mean, they actually flash the colors, and they do make sounds, and so they exist.
They were super cool. I really liked the designs and the looks. It was very cool. What was the process of finding the right locations to make this film? And second part of the question is, what was the casting process? Because obviously, you know, working with kids is, I'm sure, never an easy task, but also finding, you know, two people that can really play off each other and really fit the, you know, father-daughter dynamic.
Right. Finding locations for the movie, we had a location scout. And the most difficult part was that not only did we have to operate under the strict COVID protocols, so, you know, you're driving separately and the location scout goes in first, and then now you can go look at the place. And so it did make that a little bit more complicated, but we still were able to figure that out and looked at a lot of things virtually as well. But I'll give one of our producers, you know, he had filmed at one of these location compounds that we had filmed at. And it was through his suggestion that we found the location that we shot at, which had almost everything that we needed, because we needed one lot that had the desolate areas, you know, like that ending hill, and then that greenhouse, and then the homes. So we found a really great area using our location scout and suggestions from one of our producers that had all of that. So we were just pretty much lucky. And frankly, the timing also was crazy, because a lot of people were filming at the same time that we were filming in September. And we had the California wildfires happening. So that also added another layer of complexity to the filming process, and it delayed our shoot. But again, as filmmakers, we need to adapt and be wary. And frankly, that did adjust. One, it adjusted how we talked about the look of the film and how we would shoot it and how we would move on set. So I'm grateful for my creative team and us and all of us having kind of the confidence to make that work under those circumstances. And then the second part to this question, which is with the casting, Anissa Williams, Myrosha Palmer. I mean, I could not have done this without them. They helped us find the incredible Kennedy Butler and some other really, really stellar talent who I hope to work with down the line. But Kennedy was just, I mean, her reads were just phenomenal. And she came on set ready to work. And then Charlie Barnett, so Kennedy's in True Detective. I don't know if you've seen the latest season with Mahershala Ali. She plays his daughter in that. And then Charlie Barnett, he's in Russian Doll, You can catch him as a villain in CW's Arrow. He happens to also be a colleague and friend and someone that I've been dying to work with for a while. We had, you know, a lot of really, really incredible people who were candidates for it. But, this was kind of me and Charlie's destined collaboration, I'd say, at least for this time.
Awesome. So when you're on set, I mean, obviously you have the actors, you have, your crew and everything, but you have to keep things, you have to run a tight ship and have, things ready to go, set up time, breakdown time. What were some of the, because a lot of people always see behind the scenes of, making a Marvel film or a $20 million film. They see 20 cameras and cranes and, 300 people on set. Can you describe a little bit more of, what a short film set looks like and the type of gear that you use? Because if I'm not mistaken, you were filming on, it looked like anamorphic lenses.
Yes, we filmed on the Red Helium with Hawk anamorphic lenses. We used the Hawk 70, the Hawk 1976 vintage anamorphic lenses on this. And we shot the picture on, we had a selection of three lenses that we wanted to use. But with this project, I mean, it was great because we were able to craft that look. Me and Evan Butka, the DP, we were testing lenses and we tested all of the different Hawks for it. I'd say I filmed in so many different capacities. I filmed with the Alexa and I filmed with anamorphic, and then I've also shot spherical. Every project kind of asks for something different. So it's hard to give kind of a blanket approach to anything because you just never know. I mean, some things can just be shot on an iPhone and they look great, But with this project specifically, there was a look that we wanted to craft and a unique one. And in the lens testing process, we found it with this vintage anamorphic set. And because they're also pretty lightweight and in terms of being able to adapt, when we're on set and we're moving, that's another thing, because certain lenses are just massive. So trying to get there, we had to film this movie in a day. So you're also trying to find the right look and then what's also the right package that will give you the best latitude on the day.
So would you mind taking a minute just for any of our listeners or viewers who maybe aren't really familiar with camera terms as well? Could you just describe basically what anamorphic lenses means?
Yeah. So you have anamorphic and spherical lenses. Spherical are pretty much most of the lenses that you'll see. For instance, web cameras or DSLR. And anamorphic, which was crafted, I believe, in the 70s or 60s?
I think it was late 60s, if I remember right.
Late 60s. And it basically squeezes the image so that back in the day, it would squeeze the image two times in an ovular lens so that when it's projected, the projection would now unsqueeze the image, giving you an extremely wide composition and more information on the left and right, right? So now a lot of people these days are shooting large format, which gives you a lot of more information top to bottom. And the anamorphic is like a lot left and, you know, it was very wide and it was used on a variety of Westerns and epics and Ben-Hur and Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And the specific ways you can kind of tell is by looking at how wide the image is and then also the bokeh, because the lens is squeezing the image. Even when it's unsqueezed, anything that falls out of focus behind will look ovular because of how the lens was taking in the light. And spherical does that in a spherical ray, and then, you know, will give you a much more crisper image. Anamorphic also, because it is in a sense warping the image, because it's like taking in light and warping it into this ovular glass, the corners will be softer and you'll find more things will fall out of focus, and just technically there will be some differences when you're racking focus, you know, on an anamorphic lens. You'll get some different light changes and textures on people's faces, especially when you're testing the different lenses. But it creates a look. And again, depending on whatever kind of project that you're shooting, sometimes you might want something to look very sharp. And that's why if you want something super sharp, you go to spherical, or you can go to a company like Panavision, or, you know, other lens manufacturers, and Hawk as well, who have sharper anamorphic lenses. And for this picture, we wanted something that, you know, the vintage gave us that look that made it feel a little bit more nostalgic and made the world feel a little bit more lived in.
Absolutely. And that anamorphic look also is what gives you that, those kind of like almost stretched out lens flares as well, that a lot of Hollywood directors are very fond of.
Yeah. The lens flares for sure. That's the big one.
JJ. So I'm curious to know a little bit about, how did you go about creating the creatures that, you know, these thirst creatures? Because obviously you don't want the, you know, to just copy another film, kind of like what we were touching on in the question earlier. How do you go about creating, you know, a somewhat unique creature that can look really cool on camera and doesn't need, you know, CG to develop some like crazy alien, but not just have it be, you know, oh, that looks like a zombie. That doesn't really have a unique look to it.
I'm so thankful that we were able to work with the incredible Luca Nimolato, who actually designed the monsters for The Shape of Water and the monsters for Guardians of the Galaxy, among many other projects. I mean, and Luca was our concept artist that I worked with in crafting the look for the Ligon, which is what our monster and thirst is called. And hopefully you'll see more of Ligon, plural Ligons, in the longer format. But we did want to create something that wasn't just your typical undead monster. The thing about thirst was we needed a creature that looked like it was dying of thirst. What would that look like? And also looking to science as inspiration, what are insects and creatures that have moisture receptors? Because these creatures can basically sense moisture from very long distances. When she hits that ice machine and spills the water, that creature can sense that thing from probably half a mile away. So in the creature design, that was what we implemented. And even in the skin, seeing how the skin is tagged and dried, how it's craving any sense of moisture. That was basically our motivation. So it was looking at those insects and animals that inspire that, and then just the what would that grotesque scientific look be to inspire that story.
Awesome. So I know you mentioned already the film has been in Holly Shorts, and I believe, if I remember correctly, you said it's on Hulu as well, streaming in, as part of a, you know, a series of short films. How's the reception been so far in the film festivals and from people who have seen this?
Just getting started. It's been out for probably, I think, exactly a month. I think, what's today? Is today the 21st? Not even.
It'll be a 20th, month. I think.
Yeah, it'll be, it's been out for a month. It'll be out, it'll be a month tomorrow. So far, I'm ecstatic, you know, and you know, just about the reception that people have had. And I will say the one thing that really humbles you, kind of, especially I had seen some of my family recently, and they saw the film. And the thing that humbles you is, you know, you put so much work into a short and building this world in 5 minutes, but you know, people outside of the film industry, they'll watch it, and just having, like, my grandma, she's just like, that's it. You know, she's Haitian. She's got her accent. She's like, that's it. Where's the movie? You know, you know, we split so much, and I'm just like, okay, you're right. That is it. It is only 5 minutes. So that in a sense is humbling, knowing that, like, we were able to help hold people's attention for 5 minutes. Now the objective is to do that for a longer format approach. But I'd say outside of that, the reception has been overall positive, or at least that's what I've heard. Unless people talking smack behind my back, tell it to my face. If you don't like it, I take constructive ideas, criticism from anywhere, and I'm out to entertain and create something that people hopefully have some sort of feeling and emotional connection to. So
it's always funny, people I've seen it happen before, you know, they make a 5 or 6 minute short, and then it's, oh, that's it, where's the rest? It's like, yeah, that took like 8 months to make.
Exactly.
What do you mean, the 5 minutes? That took me almost a year to make.
They don't know, man. But that's okay. At the end of the day, you know, I've also realized that too. We talk so much about the work going into something, but the work just needs to stand on its own. So I know that much, because the audience isn't watching something like, oh my gosh, I wonder how long they took to shoot that. You know, it's like, is it good or is it not good, or is this sick or not, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I can definitely tell you, I watched the short, and at the end, I won't give away the ending, but as soon as the ending happened, and I was just like, and then it said, you know, this is the credits, I was like, wait, what? No, I want more. What happens next? I have so many questions. I need a longer version. There better be more to this.
All right, we made you thirsty, baby.
In a good way.
Good stuff.
But no, I'm super, super excited to see whenever, you know, the feature film, the long form version of this film comes out, and all the questions are answered, and you get a chance to dive deeper into the story and the characters. And, you know, I want to see what happens with this kid, you know, out in, you know, what happens with her. And, you know, again, without giving anything away, I'm just like, man, she had, like you said, she has to remember, you know, a little nursery rhyme, you know, to survive. And I got to know what happens.
I can't wait to share that. I don't think it's what most people would expect in terms of the source of, but yeah, in terms of the source of how this whole thing began. But I think it'll be exciting and enveloping in a lot of unique ways. And
you're not making this easier to wait and see and find out. You're making me want to see it more. It's not helping.
I can't wait. You know, no, it's that excitement. You know, frankly, I got to get back to writing today, and we were just kind of going back and crafting the opening sequence, especially. And I can't. I mean, I just. Yeah, I'm excited to make it, and I will work as fast as possible to get this thing in. Because I also have this anxiety. I will say this kind of answers your question. This is like another part to your question. I have this anxiety that if I don't do something, someone else is going to do it. you know, especially when I feel like an idea of mine is like, it just feels hot, you know? And with this one, I'm like, man, if I don't make this feature or series or however we expound the piece, someone else is going to do it. So I will be working around the clock for everybody who is interested.
Well, I can speak, hopefully I can speak for everyone else, but very much looking forward to that. I do know it can take time to, you know, as we said, it can take time, but, you know, we looking at like next weekend, maybe the weekend after. I gotta know. I'll give you 2 weeks. That seems like a decent amount of time.
It'll probably be out in theaters after the COVID lockdown curfew is lifted on the 21st of December. So it'll be wide release.
Perfect. I think I can hold out a few, another 4 or 5 weeks.
Now that Wonder Woman that's actually why they pushed Wonder Woman because we're being released on Christmas Day. So I'll catch y'all on Christmas.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us here at Gene Book Nerd. Really appreciate it. Fantastic film. Everyone needs to see this. It's on YouTube, I believe. Hulu. Is it only on Hulu right now, or is it on any other platforms?
It's on. If you just type in Thirst Hulu or Stir Stefan Diesel on YouTube, you'll find it. And then if you have Hulu, I recommend the Hulu because then you can see all the credits of everybody who worked on it. And I want to make sure everybody gets their shout. So on the Hulu, you'll see the full version with credits. So you go on Hulu, Bite Size Halloween, and we are episode 22, Thirst.
Awesome. Fantastic. And everybody should definitely watch it. It's a great story. And I can't wait to see the long format in coming out in a couple of weeks, right?
Coming out Christmas Day. No, Christmas Day, I'll be working on it for you guys.
Awesome. I'm very excited. And again, thank you so much for talking with us. Very much appreciate it. I'm happy the reception to the short has been fantastic. And I can't wait to see what you've got coming out for us soon and for the full-length feature version to come out.
Thank you as well. Thank you, Gene Book Nerds.
That's all for now, Book Nerds. I hope you enjoyed what Stefan had to say about his short film and about filmmaking in general. Take care, and I'll be back with another episode real soon. Any parting words for our listeners before we go, Stefan?
Hi, my name is Stefan Diesel. I'm the writer-director of Thirst, and you're listening to GeneBookNerd.com.